G&D on the Fan. We wanted to hear what Logan Paulson had to say about the hire of David Blau as offensive coordinator, a first-time play caller. Logan has coached and called plays at the high school level, built an offense. Very, very different, obviously. But for a long time in the NFL, as a really cerebral player, was around Kyle Shanahan and a lot of other
coordinators. He's a guy that people want to bring in because of his aptitude at picking stuff up and seeing the whole thing.
And I was surprised by how much he doubled down over and over again on the new episode of Take Command. We'll play an excerpt here for you. Just how difficult a process this is going to be. I'm going to skip through the initial reactions, and we'll get into all kinds of different angles. But I had asked him here about, you know, how much he thinks the relationship with Jaden Daniels was important, keeping one of his confidants in the building, and a guy who knows what he wants to run, doesn't want to run, in Blau around.
No, I think you're 100% right, and I think it's, again, it's an important thing you want to consider, obviously. I think Jaden Daniels, in the grand scheme of things, is maybe the most important variable in getting them back to the playoffs in 2026. So, again, you want him to be as comfortable as possible. But, again, this is where, you know, you're trying to parse out information. I'm trying to parse out information like everybody else, right? You want him to be comfortable. Obviously, David Blau provides that comfort, but you also want the offense to change. So how can you kind of walk that line, toe that line? What version of the offense are you going to run? And I just think about it from a verbiage standpoint. And again, like this is, like you said, this is an important variable, making sure Jaden Daniels is comfort. And now I get into the next element, which is how do you get that done, right? Are you kind of combining Cliff's offense with, you know, Ben Johnson's offense or Kevin O'Connell's offense, just as points of comparison? I think that becomes challenging, because if the verbiage you've been in the last 2 years is this, you know, air raid spread offense, like one of the things that characterizes that offense, you know, I'm going to call it spread because air raid, I think, is derivative and has a negative connotation. But this spread offense is, you're going to be limited in terms of verbiage. Like, think about the limited motion looks that they did, or under center looks, or the limited number of runs they had. Like, the install is going to increase pretty dramatically. And how do you do that? Do you stay in Cliff's offense? Do you transition to a new language? If you're transitioning to a new language, like Ben Johnson or Kevin O'Connell, you might as well just kind of scrap the Cliff thing and go back to traditional West Coast verbiage. So I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how they handle keeping Jaden Daniels comfortable. Obviously, the person, the individual, is a huge element of that, right? Like, you want to have a good relationship, but it's more than that. It's more nuanced than that. It's more layered than that. And I think that's the thing that I really can't wait to see, because, you know, I've installed offenses at a high school level, which is, a thousand times easier than doing it at the NFL level. And that comes with a lot of challenges, right? A lot of verbiage challenges, a lot of communication things, a lot of system things that need to be built and understood, especially if you're going from a relatively simple offense to a more complicated offense. So that's the thing that I'm kind of keeping an eye on here, is how do you keep the comfort of the player while also getting the offensive structure that you're looking for? Again, like Dan, Adam, whoever, you know, I think Dan specifically wants more of a run first kind of mentality, run play action pass kind of mentality. That's a different perspective, right? So whatever we're going to do, Jaden's going to be doing something different. And I think, like, that difference is something that is going to be really interesting to see how they manage that, going from a simple offense to a more complicated verbiage. That's the other thing that's tough to articulate here, and I think we'll be able to get into it a little bit in this segment, is, like, he could be the smartest football mind of all time. But you said something last segment, which is the thing that I'm trying to wrap my head around how you would go about this, right? And what it is like, you don't have an offense. You've been in a bunch of different offenses. You've probably like a bunch of different offensive principles. How do you distill that down into a clear, concise offensive vision? And maybe David Blau is so locked in. He's been doing this since he was in diapers, and he's kind of been pulling plays out and says, oh, I really like this kind of approach, philosophy, coaching point from Ben Johnson. Oh, and I really like how Kevin O'Connell tweaked it when I was there with him in Minnesota or whatever. And then I like Cliff's kind of perspective on this, and I'm going to use all these principles to kind of meld and shape and cut and select what I've got in my playbook. But it just, that is hard to do, man. It's really hard to do. Like, I think about with Kyle here in 2010, like, I remember him telling me, like, I couldn't have done it without Chris Forrester, because Chris Forrester basically developed all the rules for the run game and all the rules for the protection. And then Kyle learned them from Chris, because Chris has this great foundation in offensive line vernacular and verbiage. And then you talk to Sean with Jay, right? And the one thing about Jay is, like, Jay helped me edit out, right? He helped me kind of learn the, like, Sean's a computer, right? Sean is so smart. He's got a photographic memory. He remembers plays from 15 years ago. Everyone's seen those clips. Like, I remember as a player being with him and him being like, hey, Logan, do you remember that, you know, weak side cutoff on the backside of 18 week in 2014 where we got that Sam Mike? And I was like, no, Sean, I'm sorry, I don't remember that. Like, I just, you can draw it up and you can remind me or we can look at the clip, but I can't, I don't have that kind of recall. But he was like, Jay was the one who kind of taught me the feel of the game, right? And again, like, there's, everyone's got blind spots and everyone needs mentorship. And so I think that's the thing about this is, like, who's going to help him put this thing together? Because it is a daunting, overwhelming thing to build an NFL offense.
O-line coach, to me, is the biggest thing they're going to do. I found the firing of Bobby Johnson to be curious, if I'm being honest, but also fascinating. They didn't fire any other offensive assistants. In fact, they interviewed a bunch of them, including the primary Cliff Kingsbury ally, like David Rye, the tight ends coach, who came in with Cliff, and I would imagine will end up wherever Cliff is. But, like, he got interviewed for this job. Brian Johnson, I'm pretty sure I read, interviewed for the OC job. He gets bypassed. Does he stay? I don't know. I doubt it, but who knows? I'm speculating. But I guess my point is, the only role that they said, no, we're good, you're gone, is Bobby Johnson. I thought the line was pretty good. I don't know if you have a thought on what that signifies or means, but I think sometimes the O-line hire for a coordinator is the single most important one that you make. And I just wonder, like, who does Blau know? How comfortable is he with connections? Like, where do they go there? That's a make or break hire for him in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I think I'm really glad you brought that up, because in a lot of ways, like, the best paid assistant coach is the offensive line coach, and they're paid like a coordinator. So oftentimes you'll hear head coaches, I'm hiring four coordinators. I'm hiring defense, offense, special teams, and who's my offensive line run game coordinator? And there's a reason, like, they are dealing with protections, they're dealing with run game. And it's not just like, I know that sounds like, oh, I'm going to draw this up or get this thing locked in. It's the rules of the runs, the contingency plans versus bad looks, the check. It's a very comprehensive position. So if you can hire someone there that's excellent, I think it can really offload a lot of responsibility. And so to the Bobby Johnson thing, like, the thing about him and the thing about Cliff in terms of things you hear coming out of the building is that they weren't overly collaborative, right? So you've assembled this staff. You mentioned Brian Johnson, Anthony Lynn, guys that are David Rye, really smart guys. And we're not going to use those guys. We're just going to kind of shut ourselves in a room and develop the run game. And we're going to develop the pass game. And then that's it. So the one thing I will say about David Blau, because of his youth, is he's going to have to rely on other people. And I think that's one thing Dan Quinn, even when I was in Atlanta, really liked. He liked people who work together and we're collaborative. So if you want to say, like, why are we making this change now? One of the reasons is because I think Blau is going to be hyper collaborative in this moment. Now, again, this goes back to constructing an offense. You want your offensive coordinator to have a very strong, clear vision, to be able to edit things out that they don't need. How much obligation does David Blau feel to take Anthony Lynn's ideas, to take David Rye's ideas? And then all of a sudden you get this kind of Hydra monster of an offense where there's nothing really clear, that's also going to be deleterious, right? So, like, he's in this very unusual situation where he's got to build something from scratch. He's got to be very collaborative. How do you keep it clear and edited to the point where you get the best version of an offense? I mean, to me, it's a very tough position to be in for a young play call. And again, like, he might be the smartest dude of all time and he's going to knock this out of the park. It's just, I want to convey how challenging I think this is going to be for him. And I, again, like, he might be a stud. It sounds like he is a stud, but I will be hyper impressed if he's able to get this done at a high level.
My biggest concern with the hiring is staffing and just connections, honestly, like, when you're this young and this green, it sounds like you kind of think that that's reasonable. I didn't know if I was overstating that, but I didn't think enough about, like, you're talking about even just the paring down of three offenses and building his own offense and even the play calling element on Sundays. Like, you've been around first time play callers. It sounds like, I don't want to say worried is probably too strong, but, like, you have more nerves and anxiety about that than I've even considered. I kind of thought more about just the building of the staff part of it.
I mean, the building of the staff part's huge. And again, like, that's one of the reasons I've talked to, you know, like, guys that I think are in line for head coaching positions. And one of the things they say is, like, I've got to wait 2 years or I'm not ready yet. And I'm like, why? Like, you're super smart. Like, you're great in front of the room, all this stuff. And the thing that they always say is, I want to just make sure I've met enough people when it's time for me to put a staff together, like I'm ready to go. And so like the staffing thing is huge, right? But again, like, you know, calling a game is its own thing. Building a game plan is its own thing. Like building an offense is its own thing. And I guess he's going to have a lot of time this offseason to work on it. But that's something I would just love to be a fly on the wall. Like, where is your starting point? Like, where is the starting point here? Like, what are you going to prioritize? Are you prioritizing Jaden Daniels? Are you prioritizing the run game? If you're going to prioritize the run game, then we got to get into play action passes, shots, formations, matching formations, motions that align. Like, what's the starting point here, and how do we get this done? It'll be really interesting to see kind of what they come up with.
Is McVay the only first-time play caller and coordinator that you played for? Do you remember?
I think Kyle was a first-time play caller also, right? Like
when no, because he was in Houston before he came here.
But was he full-time or was he pass-game coordinator? I don't remember.
He was the OC. Now, I'd have to look if Gary Kubiak called plays or he did. I'm pretty sure Kyle did, though,
yeah,
in Houston.
So, yeah, I think Sean maybe was the first-time play caller.
I mean, right away, what did, like – am I right to say that the person that was around then that I talked to yesterday told me there were like some significant bumps in the road that even maybe we wouldn't have seen? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's the thing, man. It's like there's a trial by fire when it comes to putting something like that together, right? Because you say, I want to carry just even from a play volume standpoint. And this is like a thing that Sean and Kyle both ran into when I was under them, right? And like in terms of as a player. And one of the things is like, we want a solution for every possible contingency. So if they are going to play quarters match on third down, I want these four plays. But if it's cover two, I want to make sure I have these on deck, or, and they're going to bring this kind of pressure, I want these on deck. So all of a sudden you're in like, just from right there, you're in like 10 plays. And like, I remember as a player, like, I don't think Kyle would mind me sharing this. Like he would come in on Monday after a game, be like, that's on me. Like we had too much in. And so understanding like what your group can tolerate, what you actually need, what you don't need is a big thing, right? And again, like to me, that only comes with getting burned by the fire a little bit, saying, oh, that's too hot, that's too much, or that wasn't enough, or hey, maybe I didn't put these guys in enough positive positions. Like, how do I do that moving forward? So I think that's the thing to me that, and again, that I have a lot of respect for this position and this process, because I know how challenging it can be to edit, take ideas, make sure you're not overloading the players while also staying dynamic and cutting edge. I mean, that's one of the reasons I've been so impressed with Kyle, Sean, Brian Johnson, is these guys that seem to carry a lot of play volume, but are able to make sure the guys are executing at a high level. So like, how do you do that? Like where is the line for you? Even what is your day one install? Are you an outside zone team? Are you a gap scheme? That has ripples and trickle down in terms of what you're going to do. Are you then a outside zone play action pass
will
team?
Will he decide all of that himself, or will he do that with the people he's bringing in, or is Dan going to have some say? I also wonder that a little bit too. Like Dan's hiring this neophyte. I wonder if, you know, in my opinion, like going down to Cliff's office and saying on a Wednesday, here's what I want you to do. There's going to be a little bit of, I'm Cliff, get out of here. Yeah. I don't think you're going to get that from Blau, and I wonder how much that's part of this too. And is he going to be part of helping build this offense?
Well, I also think like you want your offensive coordinator to be, this is the thing that I also bump into. Like this is why it's such a fine line, such a small margin to hit, right? Because if you come in and so the O-line coach says, I want to do this. The running back coach says, I want to do this. The receiver coach says, I want to do this. And the head coach says, I want to do this. All of a sudden, right, the game plan is it's not clear. It's not who we are. It's like this weird, amorphous, grotesque collage of plays that have no bearing or support on one another. And everyone talks about good offenses, and good offenses are scaffolded out. Even Cliff's offense, as you can see, this formation, I run this. I'm going to stack that. We're going to get to this. I'm going to have this run out of this. This run protects this. And like, that's good offense. But all of a sudden, if everyone's got input, how as a first-time play caller do I edit things out? Editing is really the important thing here, and having the confidence to do that. And maybe David Blau is a beast. Maybe he's like the smartest dude of all time, and he's really confident to get that done. But to your point, like, are you hiring him so that you can have input? And then how do we build this thing out? That's the other thing that we were talking about with regards to the coaching staff. I think that's so important here is like, do you have someone that you can turn to and is like, this is my foundational rock. I can kind of bounce ideas off. These are my foundational principles that allow me to edit things out. Like, those are the things that I think are going to be really challenging for a young first-time play caller. And I can't wait to watch him do it because, again, it is really hard to do.
So this will be borderline redundant. We can leave it here. But the last thing I have to ask you, and we've kind of beat around this bush a little bit, is that I wanted to know the way you've done this is at the high school level from a coaching standpoint. But, like, how does – and you're basically asking this question rhetorically already, so I guess I know that you don't have an answer. But my question that I had written down was, like, how do you start the process of building your offense? And, like, what is that process exactly? Because the way, just as like an outsider that doesn't know anything about anything, I'm thinking he's going, okay, here are the things I really liked about Ben. Here are the things I really liked about KOC. Here's the things I really like about Cliff. I want these three staples to kind of be what the Blau offense becomes. And then I would imagine you would start with like run game and protections and like philosophies in that way. And you marry all your play action stuff off of the runs so that they match up, which is kind of one of my gripes sometimes with Cliff stuff. And then you kind of build out from there. That's like what I would think, but I don't know anything. Like, what is the actual process? When you built a playbook in high school, what did you start with?
So again, like, I can only speak from my experience. And then again, like, what my mentors did. And again, like, I messed stuff up. And when I did this the first time, I screwed it up. And this is what I have settled on in terms of process. I think you want a defining principle. Like, who do we want to be? Do we want?
Does that mean identity?
Identity, I think, is a great thing here, right? So, like, we want to be a run-first play-action team. And even above that, we want to be physical, right? So then I say, okay, well, run-first play-action football club. And how many runs do we want to carry? What do we need? Here's four runs, okay? Now, how do we protect those runs? Here's four play-actions. Here's a couple keepers off of them, right? And you just kind of layer it in. And the reason that defining principle of, you know, we want to be a run-first play-action football club, and we want to be physical. The reason that is so important is because at some point you're going to get somebody that says, I want to run this play, whatever it is. I want to run GT with a backside read, and we're going to run an RPO, and we're going to run a bubble screen off of it. And I have to look at that as a play caller and be like, does that abide by our identity? Does it abide by our verbiage? Can the kids handle that? And so because I've got this guiding light, this kind of lighthouse in the storm, I can say, are we that? And if we're not that, then I can say, no, we're not doing that.
So when you say we're not that, really quickly, do you mean from an identity standpoint, like we don't do RPOs, or do you mean that does not look like everything else that I've designed, and so it doesn't work because it's not like I'm serving Mexican and that's steak? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit. So like, we have RPOs in the offense, right? But they're off of our four base runs. So our four base runs, they evolve. They kind of tree out. There's an RPO element. There's a reverse element, whatever it is, right? But like, what I'm saying is like, does that fit within the tentacles that we've already established, the roots we've already established? Does it fit? And then if it doesn't fit, can we tweak it to fit? Maybe that's personnel. Maybe that's formation. Maybe that's alignment, right? Whatever we're going to do there, maybe we can tweak it to fit. And then if we can tweak it, is it a one-off play? And if it is a one-off play, do I like it enough to call it one time? Do we have enough time to rep it one time? And then the other element that I would point to here is, in addition to the one-off element, is can I insulate the play? Can I cover it up? If we run it one time and it's a very distinct formation, like with a very obvious motion or very obvious alignment, what else can we run off of it? So every time we're in this formation, it's not an obvious tell. And those are the types of the decisions that are really challenging. Like, they're really challenging to kind of build your offense out, rule it out, every single thing. And so I think that's where I would say, like, I can't wait to see what he does. Like, I look at Ben Johnson's offense and I say, like, that's the one I'm probably most comfortable with, just from a what it looked like, the execution, the philosophy, the principle of it. But again, like, he's been in some fun offenses. Kevin O'Connell is very similar to that, right? Like, very similar. And then you have Cliff. And so that's where it's like, you have the thing that you've done the last 2 years stands seemingly to me very in opposition to those other two things. So how do you mix those up? And it's going to be a tough road with a lot of decisions. that are going to be really important. The foundational decisions are going to be super important for what this offense becomes in training camp. And then again, like, you have to trust that you've made those right decisions, and it's going to, and the offense will be supported enough heading into 2026 season.
One thing I'm also really interested and curious about is, I remember talking to Kirk Cousins at one point about some of the offenses he'd been in within the last year. And he said that the main thing that was different about Kevin's offense that he had to, like, get with, so to speak, and figure out was in the passing game. And Sean does this too, by the way, and I think Kevin got this from Sean. But the off, it's like NBA basketball where, like, everything goes through your best player in a sense. Mm-hmm. Like, everything in L.A. essentially goes through, like, Puka Nacua in the passing game. And, like, it's not as much about – and now it's different a little bit with Davante Adams. But, like, Kirk's point is, like, I've always been a point guard. Like, I want to spread the ball around, go where my reads take me. I'm very much a – I will get the answers to the test based on the coverages. Whereas Sean's like, 15 targets for Puka Nacua. Like, and Kevin O'Connell, because you have Justin Jefferson, is that on steroids. And so if you look at it, like, it was not a read it out, hit Addison, hit KJ Osborne. It was very much a, like, we are designing this to be Justin Jefferson as the center of the universe. And I just wonder if, like, if that's something that resonates with Blau, and that means very good things for Terry. Because the McVay, well, O'Connell, but through McVay, where he was the OC in LA, that's where that comes from. And I wonder if he's more of a point guard read it out guy, or if he is a Terry McLaurin's about to eat because everything's about him guy.
So you talk about things that change offensive principle. Last year when I was at the combine, so I had to design this offense in this last offseason cycle. And one of the most important conversations I had was with someone from the Minnesota staff. And he basically looked at me, I said, how did you fix the quarterback there? Like, what happened? Like, you know, like, how did you get him right? Talking about Sam Darnold. He goes, you know what's really helpful? And I was like, I'm expecting this, you know, silver golden ball to fall from the ceiling, Jefferson, and it's going right? to be like, yeah. And he was just like, when the first guy's open, that helps the quarterback out a lot. And so I think, like, to your point, like, if you're designing an offense and that's the tenet, we want to limit the exposure of the quarterback, I have to scheme it up so that the first guy's open. How do you do that? You know, bunches, stacks, motion shifts, getting good playmakers in those positions, speaking to that skill, that person's skill set, right? And that's, again, those are offensive decisions that, again, can help you edit down stuff, right? Is this helping us with that offensive vision? And so, yeah, I do think that, like, for Terry, that's probably going to be something that's very helpful if you think that Terry can play at the level of a Puka Nacua or a Justin Jefferson. So, again, like, I think that's what I'm saying is, like, what is the fabric of your offensive identity? It's not plays necessarily, right? It's who do you want to be? Like, when you cut the tape on, the 2026 Commanders are what, right? And it's like, and everyone says, oh, well, they're a 12 personnel team or a 12. No, it's like, are they physical? Are they assignment sound? Like, those are the things you're looking at, right? Like, I think Indiana, talking about college football, runs a really simple offense, but they know exactly who they are. There's no compromise. There's no wavering. They know exactly what they want to be, right? They're a gun run team that gets downhill. They run inside zone. They run bounce to the perimeter. They have RPOs. They have play action shots. Like, that's who they are. And then everything else falls into those pillars and columns. And so, like, can you do that? Can you edit yourself enough to say, like, these are the principles we're going to be abiding by, right? And, like, I think that's a really good one. Can we help the quarterback is a good one. And then you have, like, if you've got your paper written out, help the quarterback. How do we do that? Make sure the first guy's open. How do we do that? Motion shifts and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's where I'm kind of at is, like, it's not so much the plays he's going to be running. It's the philosophy and then how he scaffolds the offense to support that tenet, those tenets that he lays out.
I want to get your reaction, Danny, to some of those thoughts from Logan, who was, I would say, a little bit nervous about going with such an inexperienced guy with so much on the line.
Indeed, yeah.
Next year. We'll do that next on G&D here on The Fan. Thanks to Toby for the update. Welcome back. We're Grant and Danny. This is The Fan. We'll take you up to 6. By the way, we just got some news that came into the station on the interview process being laid out for defensive coordinators this week. We'll get to that in just a couple of moments. But I wanted your reaction to some of what you heard from Logan there. He sounded skeptical, maybe as strong, but I would say nervous for the hire and how many eggs are being put in the David Blau basket. I think he understands. Like, I'm going, man, this is exciting. This is awesome. He's young. He's ascending. He's going to be a rock star. And I just feel like I've seen young guys do this. His point is, this is a really, really, really hard thing to do and get right. It's going to take time. It's probably going to lead to some screw-ups first. Do they have that luxury? That's an interesting way to look at
that,
it.
And that's a very valid question. So here's what it reminds me of, and bear with me. Do you remember the entire will there be a stadium at RFK saga? You remember that, right? There was some coverage on that. Yeah.
When was that?
So that was
like the last 12 years or so?
Decades.
Yeah.
So there are people who would just go, it's going to happen. I don't want to hear about it. It's going to happen. And there were people like me who were going, you might end up being right. But please understand, it's going to be an absolute petting zoo after a tornado. It's going to be ridiculous. It's uphill. It's going to start and stop and fit and start and stop. And everyone's going to be mad. Then this lawsuit will happen. Then it'll be dead. Then it'll be alive again. Then this council member will start stump speeching. And the whole thing is going to be a mess forever. Not to say that we didn't get there. So the guy that was like, it's happening, ended up being right. But the point that I'm making, not chicken littling, just saying, this is really hard. Just understand that it's going to be a mess. That's what this conversation reminds me of. This is a great offensive mind with a really good pedigree. Again, really smart backup quarterback that's been around a couple different places, thrived in a couple different systems as a coach, really well thought of. Was maybe Detroit was on its way to hiring him. Who knows? There is a great starter kit for an offensive coordinator here. If the only point is, yes, that's true, but understand he's about to, without any training, try to walk up Mount Everest without much oxygen. Like, this is really, really, really hard, and it's complicated, and it's going to require our willingness to say, I know it's hard. Please understand that we believe in you, but there's going to be some ups and downs.
Another takeaway from that conversation should be the import of getting the O-line higher right. And Jay Gruden hit on this with us as well.
Yeah, he touched on it as well.
But Logan made a really good point, and the way he said it I thought was smart. He said he's had head coaches tell him, I'm basically hiring 3 coordinators, or 4, depending on if you count ST. But offense, defense, specials, and O-line. Because you're oftentimes, you pay an offensive line coach OC money sometimes. Like, there are teams where the structure on the coaching staff in terms of pay is coordinator, coordinator, O-line coach, special teams, or something like that. And then all the position groups. Because you might be leaning on someone who's doing your O-line stuff to be your run game coordinator, to design all your run stuff, but to also be your pass protection person. You heard Logan talk about Kyle Shanahan and how he basically said in his career early on in D.C. he couldn't have done it without Chris Foerster, who's still with him in San Francisco, not coincidentally. He's like his run game whisperer. His dad, Mike Shanahan, had Alex Gibbs in Denver. Jay said, I need to get this run game figured out. It hasn't been working for me. He goes and gets Bill Callahan, and they pay him coordinator money. I just don't know. Like, Blau's hire of the O-line coach is so big, I don't know what his Rolodex is like. The fact that he played recently helps. So somebody who's been around Ben Johnson or maybe around Kevin O'Connell, but unless you can name them your, like, run game coordinator, then you're probably just getting an O-line coach as it is. A current O-line coach, run game coordinator, there's nothing else you can name them here, as you are the OC and you are the play caller, to pry them away from one of those places. So does he know enough really good options? That hire is huge. The staffing on this is going to be significant. I brought this up in the pod, but I was talking to someone who basically said, they think, I always forget the word, but I think it's just advisor. Like, outside of your staff, young coordinators should all have an advisor who's on the payroll that they can send tape to break down. Like, even when he was already established, Sean McVay brought in Jay Gruden to send him stuff during the week when he was the coach of the Rams for Jay to look at and get back to him with some insight. And I always thought it was funny because here Jay is on the payroll for Sean. Sean's bouncing stuff off of him and asking him questions, and people are upset that we're having him on the radio show to talk about football. Like, what does he know? I'm like, ask the Rams.
Knows a decent amount.
Yeah, they just won a Super Bowl, and they're curious what he thinks about how they're running, you know, these concepts. But anyway, you got to pick someone that advises you, that watches stuff for you. And like Zach Robinson picks Kenny Zampezi, and I don't know how helpful he was. Maybe he was helpful, but they couldn't figure out the answers in Atlanta. So like that hire is important. It's just a lot of things he's got to get right here, and it is going to be hard to do, I think.
I'm hoping Dan Quinn can help with that to a degree. You know what I mean? Because, again, remember, what's the selling point? But it's the relationship guy.
But he was so wrong about the staff the first time. His words, not mine. He blew out Joe Witt. That was a bad hire. Yeah. He blew out Cliff Kingsbury. His words, not mine. That was a bad hire.
Mm-hmm.
The OC hire is a guy who's never done it before, who is, you know, you're putting the cart before the horse a little bit here. I'm excited about it. It's an exciting high upside, huge ceiling hire, but it's not like you just brought in Mike McDaniel because of your relationship or Kevin Stefanski because he wanted to work with Dan Quinn and a year away from being a head coach. Like, there's no evidence that the proof is actually in the pudding, this whole, like, man, Dan Quinn's Mr. Hire a Great Staff. Well, Mr. Hire a Great Staff, 2 years after hiring a great staff, has to hire a new one because he's firing everybody. Let's go to Elijah in D.C. What's up, Elijah?
What's going on, Granddaddy? Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
I still think there's no way to quantify how much he's done or how little that he's done to prepare him for this moment. And I was talking to my man over the break, like at 106.7, this is y'all time, the Grant and Danny show. Now, if, like, for example, if I worked with y'all and my job was to put together clips to say these are the topics that are hot right now, and I know y'all work extremely hard on those things. You don't need nobody to do that, but if I still did that,
yeah, seriously, we'll take help.
But I'm sure.
No, I got what you mean.
Mentally, then you can pick at the end. You can say, well, these are the things that are jumping out to me. If you're thinking of yourselves as coordinators, that doesn't mean that Toby and you all go out of town, there's still symmetry that goes on at 106.7 that we aren't like, what the heck is going on? So that means that you all understand in the building who you all have. It doesn't matter if I get a chance to talk to Toby and chop it up with him and talk to the Zabe and whoever else is sitting in those chairs. As long as y'all know what's going on, everything is cool and y'all can move around knowing that. And so that's what I'm putting my eggs in. You better believe this is going to be Dan Quinn's last opportunity, that he knows what he's going to get to Bilal, or he feels that there's enough there that there's an opportunity to let him cook. Because just because he was preparing for Cliff Kingsbury all year and whatever that looked like, that doesn't mean that when it's time for him to actually cut the stove on and cook and have some guys to prepare the other things that he needs, that he won't be able to do this the right way.
It's a really good call.
Good call, bud.
I mean, there's no doubt that Dan's putting all the eggs in the basket here, and it's ballsy, but he knows what he's getting into.
Yeah.
He knows Blau well.
He knows what's at stake.
He's been monitoring him for 2 years, and they've been saying to anyone who would listen kind of behind the scenes, they got this rising star in the building that they knew would be capable of more and more. And they did the thing Dan said that he wanted to do, the thing that I was worried they wouldn't be able to do. They layered it. So when Cliff was moving on, now, not the way we thought it
would
be.
Yeah, we thought it would be getting a head coach.
There was a guy in the building that they went to. Just so happens it's a guy probably a year or two ahead of when a lot of us thought maybe they could have, should have. 800-636-1067 is the number. At the top of the hour, I want to get into the defensive coordinating interview set up for Thursday with a recently fired head coach who could be coming to the Commanders to join their staff. But next, are you more excited or are you more nervous about this Blau hiring? That's the question on The Fan. G&E brought to you by the law firm Kondori & Murad today. They'll take care of all the important paperwork you may need. They'll take care of a last will and testament, set up a living trust, put together a medical power of attorney. Go schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. And be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. They'll give you a discount if you mention the show. You just heard our detailed excerpt from Logan Paulson. That was from Take Command, the podcast I do with him, discussing Danny, the hiring of David Blau, and I think more than anything else, Ron Rivera style, More so than anything else, okay?
It really is.
He was just accentuating, documenting how hard this is going to be. I also think he's like looking at this like a messy room and he doesn't know where to start. You know what I mean? In terms of cleaning up the room.
Great analogy.
He literally was like, how do you build an offense?
There's no clean corner where you can start stacking stuff. How do you do laundry when you can't get to it? Yeah.
He's like, you're going to be listening to the tight ends coach and the O-line coach and the D coordinator and the head coach, who's also the D coordinator. And all of a sudden, you're trying to appease everybody. And what is your actual plan and identity?
Now, is that enough where you wouldn't have done it?
It's not for me.
Because it's not for me.
I am excited about it. And I think the ceiling is the roof, to quote Michael Jordan.
Mm.
Or the ceiling is the sky. I don't remember what exactly his zing was back in the day. But I believe this is a boomer bust, risk reward, high upside play. In the same way that I would go a year too soon on rolling the dice on a guy like McDaniel as a head coach, I would go Blau over old school retread, been around the block 9 times. I hate that I'm like over throwing Ken Zampezi under the bus, who I've never mentioned. It might be great. But like, if you were to tell me Zampezi or Bevel or somebody's walking through that door, I'm good.
Right.
Like, let's find the McVay. Let's find the LaFleur.
And that's where I come from. As a scarred fan of this franchise, all that I would need to hear from somebody smart over there, they can get their word out whenever they feel like it, year early instead of a year late. You know, like all the guys we missed out on. Good enough for me.
We're trying to not make the mistake
that
Dan Quinn made in Atlanta when all those guys left the building. Chris in Tacoma Park, you're on the Fan. What's good?
Hey, guys. I'm nervous about this. I mean, yes, there's a ton of upside. The kid's smart, but not only has he got to get the coaching hires right, there's play calling, clock management, all this stuff that he's never had to think about before, and it's not like Dan Quinn can pick up the slack like he did on defense last year.
Well, that's the big question, right? Yeah. Is if it doesn't go well, what's the pivot? That's actually really smart, too. Quinn could save Joe Witt's bacon. Nobody's saving David Blau's bacon.
Well, the other part of that is it reminds me of Rivera and Scott Turner. So when Rivera goes, hey, Scott, it's Ron, it really is. You got to run the ball more. Oh, okay, Mr. Rivera, no problem. Are we doing that? Did he walk over and dictate?
I do wonder
if don't want that.
Some of hiring a guy with so little experience is he's not slamming the door on you when you tell him to do something. You know, like Cliff might have because he actually had been a head coach, had a little ego, probably earned, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's like I've done you this favor.
I'm giving you this job. Mm-hmm. We're going to work together on this. Let's go to Ryan and Frederick. What's up, Ryan?
Hey, guys. So there, it's reasonable to expect, you know, there's a high upside with him. But I want to propose this scenario. Let's say he does great next year and he goes 12-5, does great. What's the roadmap to us actually being the beneficiaries to his upside? Because let's say he does great and everyone around the league's talking about David Blau and everyone wants David Blau now and we lose him. He becomes a head coach somewhere else and we don't get to become the beneficiary. What's the avenue for us to actually become the beneficiaries of this high upside everyone talks about?
Now you are singing to the choir, my friend. This is why Daddy don't do defensive coaches. No, it's a great point. So number one thing I'll say is Dan Quinn is confident, I think, and the Commanders are confident that there's no way he's getting a head coaching job next year, even if it goes really, really well. Look at, say, Grant Udinski in Jacksonville, who's 29, OC. He's going to be interviewing, I think it's for the Browns job this year. He'll get interviews this year. He probably won't get a job until next year. It'd be really a big jump. And Udinski's at least an OC. Blau would be going from assistant quarterbacks coach to head coach in the NFL in the span of like 365
So remember
days.
Little Bobby Slowick, like where he was going to be a darling and it was happening and then the year wasn't so good, so then he was out of favor. Like if you put together a couple years, yeah, you probably lose him.
But to go from assistant quarterbacks coach to head coach in 365 days is beyond unprecedented. A guy like Sean McVay, when he got hired as a 30-year-old head coach or whatever it was, 29, he'd already been a coordinator for multiple years calling plays for multiple years. He was more of a known commodity at that time. Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. The question becomes, let's say it goes really, really well for a year.
Yep.
He gets a couple of interviews. Is there someone that would really roll the dice after 1 year to say, hot shot, will bring him in? I guess it's possible. But to the caller's point, with any coordinator you bring in, you can't really reap the benefits offensively, which is just more valuable than defensive benefits.
It puts the impetus to find the next plow. You got to find another guy that's the wunderkind, that's young, that's hopefully, you know, going to streamline things for Jaden Daniels.
And if Brian Johnson leaves after you bypassed him,
yep.
If David Rye leaves, which I'm almost positive he will, he's tight with Cliff.
I'll go with Cliff.
Then you're going to have a whole new staff in here.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully Blau brings in a really young, likable quarterbacks coach or something that could be the next guy. But that's the point. You got to be layering it. Gus in Arlington, what's up?
Hey, guys. My issue is this sort of reminds me of the Bieniemy hire, only because this is supposed to be Quinn's last year, right? Did he get an extra year because he hired someone like Blau? We all want to give the kid a break, but we're also expecting results next year.
Yeah, I don't think this changes the clock on Kingsbury, or excuse me, on Dan Quinn at all by going away from Kingsbury. If anything, what you've done is you've turned the hourglass over to start the clock, to really put the pressure on yourself. So
yeah.
If it goes badly, you can't go to Josh Harris and say, look, one more year of David Blau, we're close. Because what Harris would say is, okay, well, if he's great next year and he leaves, we're just doing this again, to the caller's last point. So that is the risk here. That is why this is, to me, one of the gutsiest coaching decisions I've seen in a long time. Because I think he is entering make it, break it, third year, got to have it, better start fast, and you're going with the 30-year-old coordinator who's never done it.
Yeah, to me, the thing that my risk, my worry, I understand there's speed bumps. Like, that to me is the position, even for guys that are experienced, as they're learning new players and systems and whatever. To me, my worry is that Dan Quinn now thinks that he'll have outsized influence on it. Does that make sense? Like, because I gave the guy that wouldn't have gotten this job anywhere else, who's, you know, 29 years old, he's my new OC, it's my OC. And we're going to do things my way, Dan Quinn style, a little bit more than kind of the new, you know, modern wunderkind stuff. So I don't say chop the legs out. That's my worry. I have no documented evidence of that, honestly, but that's my fear, because I'm baking in some ups and downs.
I got odds on A.J. Brown's next team if the Eagles trade him. I think you guys will want to hear those. We'll do that next. Plus, a recently fired head coach is interviewing with the Commanders this week for their D.C. job. We'll get into that in moments. Also got a preview Monday Night Football and playoff game number 6 of this 3-day tournament. G&D on the Fan.